WGBW Denmark, Green Bay's real news and great conversation, a civic media radio station.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. President Trump did not give a reason for firing the nation's top military official, but ABC's Rachel Scott says
Pete Hegseth, the defense secretary, said as recently as November that he wanted to see C.Q. Brown gone, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs. This is a reversal, though. Trump nominated C.Q. Brown to be the chief of staff for the Air Force back in 2020. Hegseth, though, questioning whether or not he even got his job simply because he is a black man.
Today, the president will speak at CPAC, the conservative political summit. Hamas released six more hostages to Israel, the last group to be released in the first stage of the ongoing ceasefire. Authorities in Virginia Beach say two police officers were shot and killed late Friday during a traffic stop. Police did not give further details, but said there's no active threat. Bybit, a major crypto exchange, says it was the victim of a hack that stole about $1.5 billion of digital currency. This is ABC News. Luigi Mangione, the man accused of killing a healthcare company CEO, appeared in a New York City courtroom Friday as his supporters gathered outside. ABC's Morgan Norwood was there.
This was the scene outside a New York City courthouse. A raucous crowd of supporters cheering on accused killer Luigi Mangione and protesting what they call a broken healthcare system. Supporters waiting for Mangione to make his first court appearance since he was arraigned in the murder of United Healthcare CEO Brian Thompson. Mangione wearing a bulletproof vest over a dark green sweater, surrounded by officers. He was shackled both at the ankles and handcuffed.
In Western New York, a jury needed less than 2 hours to convict a 27-year-old man of attempted murder and assault for the 2022 stabbing attack on author Salman Rushdie. Hadi Mattar faces up to 25 years in prison when he's sentenced in April. I'm Brian Clark, ABC News.
I'm Lisa Hale with WGBW News. Your news in depth. Find it in the news section at WGBW.FM.
Matt Nair on air.
Oh, Randy Manner is here.
What can you do about this? Focus on what you can impact. Find the courage to speak up to your elected official. If you are silent, then your elected official at the local, state, or federal level will think you completely agree
yes.
with what it is you're doing.
Silence equals acceptance.
Correct.
Matt Nair on air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local civic media radio station and on the app. The Todd Alba Show.
Elon Musk putting in so much money that it drowns out other people's voices to decide who our next Supreme Court justice is. Whether or not you're going to vote Republican or Democrat or Schimmel or Crawford, your voice is getting drowned out by Elon Musk, a guy who has no business in Wisconsin. And you don't think that Brad Schimmel is going to be in Elon Musk's pocket? It's going to affect us in Wisconsin.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local civic media radio station and on the app.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tome Olson. Some Wisconsin tribal nations are using renewable energy to reassert supremacy over their communities while creating opportunity. Judith Ruiz Branch reports.
Tribal nations have historically faced challenges to own and control their own electricity, even though a significant number of plant and utility infrastructure are in close proximity to reservation lands. Isaiah Ness founded Sunbear Industries after witnessing disproportionate opportunities in the renewable energy space.
There's not much disparity in the type of person that was receiving solar. It was one of those things that you could see the common trend very easily.
Ness now helps indigenous and minority communities in Wisconsin to build renewable energy infrastructure with an emphasis on intersecting cultural appreciation and economic opportunities. The Menominee Nation is working to achieve energy sovereignty by 2035. Part of that vision began with their Solar Elder Project, which was created to ensure elder community members are never without power during outages.
It makes more sense for them to have on-reservation power-producing plants and facilities that are also sourced from clean energy, and then for them to be able to reinvest into their own communities.
Community partnerships and grants have been a crucial component to the progress Indigenous communities have made thus far. Uncertainty looms on whether programs like these will be included in proposed spending cuts under the Trump administration. For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org. This story was produced with original reporting from Robert Chappell for Madison 365.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tome Olson.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, partly sunny with a high near 28. Feels a touch cooler with a strong southwest wind. For tonight, mostly cloudy, lows around 16. Partly sunny, 35 for Sunday. Some freezing rain possible Sunday night, lows around 29. And a touch warmer Monday, 41.
Right now, it's 19.
Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, we will break down all of the most recent news and how it affects all of us here in Wisconsin. Plus, this shouldn't be a thing. Don't miss it.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 10.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Welcome to Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel. Civic Media's weekly review and discussion of some of the most significant news stories in the areas of law, government, courts, and the aspiration for justice. And now, here's your host, Jim Santel.
This is Amicus, a law review. Appreciate so very much and value so very much your contributions to our discussion, along with my terrific producer, Greg. We're in the studios here of Civic Media, taking your phone calls at 855-752-4842. You can also be a part of our text line. Drop a note, a comment, a question, as several of you have done, as we talk about this major decision made by our president to issue an executive order this past Tuesday that does many things along the way, arguably brings within the ambit of the White House all sorts of executive agencies, independent executive agencies, executive with a small e, because they execute the law, at least up until now, independent of a president. The president now signing this order, bringing them all within the ambit of the White House, arguably. And yes, indeed, all of this will be challenged, whether it is the SEC or the Federal Trade Commission or the Federal Communications Commission and the NLRB, the Environmental Protection Agency, the Federal Reserve, all of these things as the president goes about to implement this executive order. All of them will end up in federal court. And as we said during the course of our first hour, federal judges are not only taking these cases, but very promptly imposing what are called temporary restraining orders and also injunctions against the president from going ahead with this. So these things will all be subject to federal oversight in the courts of our nation. And we can look forward, presumably, to hearty discussion about the laws of our nation, what the Constitution establishes, and hopefully judges embracing. Judges, again, of all political persuasions, regardless of who appointed them in recent times and in past, are saying consistently that the Constitution means something and that these things that are overtly unconstitutional, inconsistent with precedent of the Supreme Court, cannot stand. And so we'll look forward to more of that litigation pending. We'll get in just a moment to some of the concerns about that, as this president, who has now articulated his view that he is the law, l'état c'est moi, will increasingly, in response to what federal judges are enjoining, are stopping, are saying simply, we're not doing that. I'll give you a couple of instances of that in just a few moments. Simply thwarting, simply saying, judges, I'm not going to follow what you are directing, again, because I am the law. Telling these independent agencies that if they do want to do anything with respect to policy, with respect to practice, the implementation of a law, even the expenditures of monies for policies and things that should indeed be within their ambit, they've got to get passage through either the Attorney General or him at the White House. That is a stunning reversal. And again, arguably even more important, this articulation of the view that there is no interpretation of the law. There is no law. There's no enforcement of the law absent what my current president says it is. And that is, of course, contrary to what we've understood for 250 years about how our Constitution works, how that building up there on Capitol Hill works. That's called the Congress. How that other regal building just beyond it on First Street works. That's called the Supreme Court. And in these times of concerns about the future of our nation, this executive order should be a source of dramatic concern and upsetness and dismay for all Americans, regardless, once again, of your political view. Taking a lot of very good texts coming in as a result of our identification of this issue, this event, this rule of law event from just this past week. Very much appreciate the comment from Rich about what we're doing here, and including some references to history and the expertise of part of our amicus commission. Rich, thank you so much for that. Appreciate also Chuck from Racine calling to my attention, and therefore, by virtue of my articulating this and my reference to Thomas Cromwell in this evolution of authority inside Great Britain and England and kings and parliaments, Chuck telling us that Thomas Cromwell is going to be the subject of a major mini-series, an info series on, again, Thomas Cromwell during the reign of King Henry VIII, that reign also being the subject of a series coming up on PBS beginning on March 23rd. Chuck, appreciate that very much. Also appreciate Christy asking if any of these kinds of things, including presumably this recent executive order, are impeachable offenses. It's a great question as well. Appreciate that, Christy, as well. As we know well, the issue of impeachable offenses, the subject of way too much history in our recent times. We know well that the standard in our Constitution are high crimes and misdemeanors. Gerald Ford very notably said that your impeachable offenses are whatever the Congress says it is. Those articles of impeachment begun in the House and tried, if at all, by the United States Senate. Christie accurately notes that under these circumstances, where there is a majority party in the House that is also the party of my president, highly unlikely that articles of impeachment will proceed from any of this. But if indeed, putting aside that political reality on Capitol Hill, if there are actions that are plainly in violation of the law, the law establishing, for example, the Securities and Exchange Commission, the EPA, the NLRB, all these agencies, and the president directing them to do things financially, policy-wise, that are simply contrary to the law. Well, the Constitution also contemplates that the president take care. Remember this? The take care clause of the Constitution. It is not impossible to contemplate a congressman, a congresswoman, members of Congress, even a majority at some point, identifying articles of impeachment that are premised upon the notion that executing on this executive order, l'état, c'est moi, the president has overreached. He is exercising powers that are not his under the Constitution, not his under the legislation as it's passed, and therefore the subject of articles of impeachment. The president, for example, has taken the position that a 1974 law, the Impoundment Control Act, is unconstitutional. And he has said that basically, again, as many of these cases now in federal court, that he can exercise his authority as president to dole out monies as he sees fit. And, of course, under that law, the Congress specifically restricted the president's ability to refuse to spend money that lawmakers had appropriated. That came in the wake of, yes, Richard Nixon. The Justice Department has sought to establish that only the Solicitor General may speak for the executive branch before the Supreme Court. But Congress, once again, has by statute given many of these independent agencies independent litigation authority. I visited this and knew this and embraced this consistently when I was a U.S. attorney.
Although the Department of Justice handles most of the litigation in our nation, these independent agencies, many of them have independent litigating authority. And so they appear, yes, indeed, with assistant U.S. attorneys inside the Department of Justice, but they've got that independent authority. If the present attorney general, if the president's solicitor general articulates the view that they can no longer defend themselves, they can no longer articulate their positions independently in federal court, that's in violation of the law. All of those things are subject to review by a Congress that should be looking at all of this as this happens over not only the recent month or so, but goes forward based upon this issuance of an executive order. The president, of course, also ousting various leaders of these agencies. He ousted a member of the NLRB. That move, of course, disregarded a provision in the congressional law that created the NLRB, the National Labor Relations Agency, that says any member of the board may be removed by the president upon notice and hearing for neglect of duty or malfeasance. That's negative. That's malfeasance, bad actions in office, but for no other cause. Can make the argument, a strong argument, that that removal, among others that you know well in the news, is contrary to the law, could be easily subject to an article impeachment that says, Mr. President, you are no longer taking care that the laws of the United States be faithfully executed. And this executive order that you issued on February 18th, in which you say that the law is only what you say it is contrary to the Constitution, contrary to the laws established by the Constitution, and yes, indeed, also contrary to the precedent established by the Constitution that, yes, regrettably, as late as 8 months ago, may have given you some reason to believe that you've got this authority. All of that, a great question, Christy, about impeachable offenses coming up. All of that also a part of other questions coming in. Appreciate very much comments and questions. Let's begin with some of those on our line. Let's begin with Joe from Madison. Joe, appreciate your comments or your questions this morning. Always glad to hear from you.
Terrific show as always, and I really appreciate the history that gets us to the point, this point, and also the kind advice from a previous caller that mentions that Cromwell will be part of a series, which I think would provide even more information and background, but great information about the importance of what Trump has done. I wanted to ask your opinion of another situation that I think bears on the same one, and that is that late on Friday, apparently Trump purged of some of the America's top military officials,
yes,
including the current Joint Chiefs of Staff,
right,
a man named Air Force General Brown, and then a woman, U.S. Navy Admiral Lisa Franchetti, was right, also put out to pasture. This is very worrisome, but what struck me as even more worrisome about this is that he apparently at the same time removed the judge advocates general for,
yes,
the Army, Navy, and the Air Force. Okay, these are positions that ensure enforcement of military justice. Would this not also be true that those three individuals that just were junked by Trump were also responsible for ensuring that people in the military obey the idea that the Constitution is who they should obey, not a particular president? Is it just as worrisome that these JAG officers are tossed on the trash heap and what that portends? In your background as a lawyer and in your time served in the military, I'd love it if you take a few minutes to just chat about it.
Absolutely. Joe, tremendously insightful perspectives and questions here. And yes, indeed, just happens Friday night, as Joe just said, firing General C.Q. Brown, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and doing it on his Truth Social platform, announcing the nomination of Air Force Lieutenant General Dan Razzan-Kane as a replacement. Now, again, the president has got some authority to do these kinds of things. I'll focus, as you did just now, Joe, on this notion of getting rid of the JAG officers and the JAG judges as well. You made passing reference to my time as a civilian in Iraq. I have the greatest respect, no but coming up here at all, the greatest respect for those judge advocates generals who not only are responsible for ensuring the enforcement of the law inside our military, but also doing things to keep us safe and secure overseas and, yes, domestically as well. When we come back, I'm going to answer Joe's question in greater specificity and also take more phone calls and more comments, all of that coming up on Amicus, a law review.
We'll be right back. From Ashwaubenon to Alloway, this is 97.9 WGBW.
Do you hear that? Asthma triggers are everywhere, from dust mites, pet dander, and pollen, to smog and smoke. An asthma attack can strike anywhere, anytime. Be prepared with quick-acting Primatene Mist. Clinically proven to open airways quickly. It's the number one FDA-approved asthma inhaler available over-the-counter. Primatene Mist. Breathe easy again. Use as directed.
You want to feel important. You want to be a part of something bigger, something that matters and can help change things. You want to feel like you belong. We know. We felt that way too. And that's why we did something about it. We aren't just Army National Guard soldiers. We are normal people just like you. And together, we can make a difference. Take on your legacy. Visit NationalGuard.com to find out more.
Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard. Aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW.
This is Amicus, a law review. My name is Jim Santel. Speaking with you and engaging in good discussion, wonderful discussion, our callers, our texters, about this major thing that happened just this past week, our president declaring himself the law in America and declaring that all these independent agencies have got to be responsive, not just to him, but to his directives financially in terms of policies and practices, changing the ways in which the law works. Again, getting back to Christie's good question, at what point does the Congress come forward and say, you're working in violation of the law, Mr. President? And if you don't stop doing it, we're going to impeach you, because under the Constitution, that's what should be happening. That's what the check and balance for this kind of unbridled exercise, more of it plainly continuing, as Joe just indicated, at the Pentagon on the opposite side of the river there in Washington, D.C., on the Potomac River, at the Pentagon just late this past week, firing the Joint Chief, the chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and others there at the Pentagon, also terminating the roles of lawyers there, the JAG officers there. Again, I was commenting right before the break about the incredibly important work that they do every single day in enforcing the law. Yes, indeed, the president is, under our Constitution, the commander in chief, and that's the reason why this issue about adherence to the directives and policy perspectives when it comes to our national defense, we're vested in our president. On the other hand, the issue that Joe raises about concerns about these unilateral firings, indeed, the firing of the president and until late this past week, the current Joint Chief of Staff, who was appointed by Donald Trump, actually, in his first term, all of that unsettling not only the mechanisms of the Defense Department, but also getting rid of the lawyers and the people who know what they're doing. Once again, getting rid of this expertise inside government that's made government work for all of our times contemporaneously with these actions of trying to undermine exactly what they do. Are there rules and regulations, Joe, inside the Department of Defense that regulate these things? Yes, indeed. Will there be internal administrative challenges to these kinds of things as people are responsible for deciding inside the Department of Defense on how rules and Defense Department issues should be resolved? You bet. And again, when you, as we've seen in these other areas of mass firings in many other domestic areas, all these kinds of things where the expertise is shown the door and you're no longer there, the question will be, how is it that the Defense Department can work not just with the expertise of the lawyers, but the expertise of all these other people? Anticipate, yes, we may not see them publicly as we do in these other areas in federal court initiated by civil complaints, but internal to the Department of Defense, my own sense, having worked intimately again with people like General David Petraeus when I was in Iraq, great respect
great respect for the processes of the military and the work that they do to keep us safe and the internal integrity of these lawyers and, yes, indeed, of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, ensuring that we are safe and secure in this nation. Internal to the Department of Justice, do not know for certain, but can predict with some reliability that right now there are things going on to challenge both directly and indirectly these recent firings of these major positions there, people occupying those positions, once again, in an attempt to place in those positions people that Donald Trump apparently believes are more loyal to him. Hugely concerning. Joe, appreciate so much your observation about all of this. Bill, calling in from Oconomowoc. Bill, you've got a question of sort of a hostile takeover here and what may happen in our nation. Go ahead, Bill. Thanks for joining our conversation.
Thank you so much for your program. You know, we're talking about an impeachment, which is, you know, could happen. But this is more than just impeachment. This is a hostile takeover. We've never had anything quite like this, so we don't have a roadmap how to follow this exactly. Yes, we have, you know, the executive, the judicial, and the legislative. But we know the legislative isn't helping us much. The only one that is helping us now is the judicial. Do you think this could be declared a hostile takeover, a declare of a national emergency declared, and U.S. Marshals would be in charge of the White House? You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
What do you think? I'll hang up and I can't wait to hear you.
Bill, appreciate so much the question that comes out of concern about our nation, right? Exactly. And I would wed your appropriate, not just rhetorical question, to a great comment that's in the text line from Matt coming in from Middleton. He says, at what point is revolution necessary? Maybe another form of a hostile takeover here to have our democracy or get it back. Where are we democratically? And indeed, as many of you know from having listened to me in the past, one of the things that I often look to is the references to foreign nations. We have seen in the pre-Gaza war Israel, when the Israelis were so very upset with their government because of what Benjamin Netanyahu was proposing with respect to the judiciary, a legal takeover there. The prime minister there declaring himself the law. L'état, c'est moi, right? What did they do? They got into the streets. They shut the nation down. You couldn't get into Ben Gurion Airport. People of all employment areas shut down, all kinds of mechanisms there. And indeed, in time, the Supreme Court then said, yes, Mr. Prime Minister, you cannot do exactly what you're doing. We look to South Korea, where once again, this very ill-fated attempt to establish martial law there. What happened? The people flooded the streets of Seoul and other places, and they ensured that their legislatures could get over the fences to overcome the military there that was trying to prevent them from getting into their offices to ensure that martial law would be brought to its end. And they continue not only in the wake of the decision by the legislature to impeach the now former president there, they continue to advocate in the streets of America. Now, we hasten, as always, to say we're not advocating never do violence of any kind. But that notion of civil disobedience to a government that has now lost its way. And I think that's what others here are articulating here. Here's the issue with respect to the phone call regarding the marshals in particular, the Marshals Service. And it goes back to your very good point about not having a roadmap here. We've never done this before. The marshals, of course, are appointed by the President of the United States of America. And the U.S. Marshals Service is inside, of course, the Department of Justice as well. That Department of Justice right now headed up by Pamela Bondi. She is an appointee, obviously, of this president. And so U.S. Marshals, I'm sure, are going to be individually conflicted as perhaps they're asked to do things, just like our military may be, with which they feel are contrary to our Constitution, but they are still beholden structurally to the Department of Justice, to the president. And all of that kind of thing underscores the very good point that you just made, which is we don't have a roadmap for this. What happens when the very structures that we rely upon to provide those checks and balances are no longer in place? And the people that we would count upon, the legislature, as you just said, the people in Congress who are supposed to be responding, providing oversight,
maybe at some point impeachment, if it gets to that point, plainly are not doing what they are supposed to do. The answer is exactly what you advocated for, which is a response to a hostile takeover, a response to a government that's no longer a part of what indeed Thomas Jefferson and James Madison and George Mason contemplated, which is a people that serves the government. And so we think about that as we think about next steps. We'll continue with this important discussion here on Amicus Law Review as we continue to discuss what the president has done just this past week, taking more of your calls and your questions here on Amicus Law Review.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home of Mino and the Mayor.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. President Trump did not give a reason for firing the nation's top military official, but ABC's Rachel Scott says
Pete Hegseth, the defense secretary, said as recently as November that he wanted to see C.Q. Brown gone, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs. This is a reversal, though. Trump nominated C.Q. Brown to be the chief of staff for the Air Force back in 2020. Hegseth, though, questioning whether or not he even got his job simply because he is a black man.
Today, the president will speak at CPAC, the conservative political summit. Hamas released six more hostages to Israel, the last group to be released in the first stage of the ongoing ceasefire. Authorities in Virginia Beach say two police officers were shot and killed late Friday during a traffic stop. Police did not give further details, but said there's no active threat. Bybit, a major crypto exchange, says it was the victim of a hack that stole about $1.5 billion of digital currency. This is ABC News.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
The Bucks win in Washington. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Bucks beat the Wizards 104-101. Giannis fouling out for the first time in 3 years. The Bucks seem to run out of gas in the final minutes. Head coach Doc Rivers.
You know, it's like we're trying to exhaust the clock, you know, the last 5 minutes, and instead we stop playing and allow them to get back in the game. But I'll take the win. So back-to-back, off a tough one last night. We got in at 3:15 in the morning.
5 games in 8 days. The Bucks host the Miami Heat tomorrow at 5. The Wizards' Chris Middleton. On finding out after 12 years, the Bucks had traded him to Washington.
Yeah, it was tough. Definitely emotional, you know, for a couple of days. Think about all the ups and downs or just my time in Milwaukee. So I think the emotion I came from was just being grateful for the most part that, you know, I could be somewhere for so long. It's definitely sad that, you know, I'm not in that uniform anymore because I've accomplished so much on and off the court, but I still get to play basketball just for a different team now. So that's the part I'm still happy about.
That's the Wizards' Chris Middleton with Sports on Mike Clemens.
Hey, it's Amanda with another new WISCO 411 for you, and let me tell you, being a mom is tiresome, and you need a break. So take one at Mom Prom on Saturday, March 8th at the Hilton.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, partly sunny with a high near 28. Feels a touch cooler with a strong southwest wind. For tonight, mostly cloudy, lows around 16. Partly sunny, 35 for Sunday. Some freezing rain possible Sunday night, lows around 29. And a touch warmer Monday, 41.
Right now, it's 19.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Mississippi has one of the country's worst records for protecting voting rights and advancing democracy reforms. So when pro-voter bills emerge from the state House and Senate, like in-person early voting and the ability to cure a mismatched absentee signature, democracy advocates take notice. Mississippi is one of only 3 states without some form of in-person early voting, along with Alabama and New Hampshire. The Mississippi Free Press reports that February 12th, the Mississippi Senate passed SB 2654, allowing 15 days of early voting, ending the Saturday before the election at noon. The Republican-sponsored bill passed 39-12, but even if the House advances, it may still be vetoed by Mississippi Governor Tate Reeves, who accused the bill's sponsor of making the state's elections less secure. The Mississippi House also took some positive steps. HB 1419 prohibits moving or closing a polling place location within 60 days of an election, sometimes used as a voter suppression tactic. HB 163 sets rules for absentee ballots where the signature on file doesn't match the signed outer ballot envelope and would give the voter a chance to cure the problem. and HB 288 would make each county's five election commissioners nonpartisan positions. All three bills now move to the Senate. We have more on these bills and local reporting at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
What celebrity would you like to hug? It's International Hug Day. I wouldn't say Josh Brolin is like my favorite actor, but he's got like a quiet macho-ness to him. Actor Glenn Morshower joins us now.
My self-esteem was jolted when you did not mention me as your hugging preference.
I didn't want to rush it. I just want to see how. Let's just dip our toes in the water here and see what kind of relationship develops, shall we?
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome RogerEbert.com film critic Mariah Gates for some Oscar talk, and entrepreneur Chad Franker joins the show to talk about a new program to combat loneliness.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 till 8.
This is Amicus, a Law Review. My name is Jim Santel, your host for this, the remaining minutes of our broadcast here on Civic Media. Also joined in the studio by my wonderful producer, Greg, and taking your phone calls, your texts at 855-752-4842. Spending most, if not all, of the hour talking about this stunningly shocking executive order issued by the president. I recognize it's wonky, and I recognize it's the kind of thing that lawyers love to talk about, and we do, but every American should be loving to talk about this because it is of such dramatic import. This notion articulated in writing by the President of the United States of America that all agencies are now subject to his review, his oversight, his authority, and that any interpretation of law by any agency, independent or within the ambit of the White House, that contravenes what he says is not the law. And indeed, the Attorney General also has some authority to announce what the law is. But there is no regulation, no guidance, no position advanced in litigation that does not derive expressly from the president's own interpretation of the law. And along the way, suggesting, of course, that the other branches do not have a role to play. And that leads to a great caller here, Dick, calling in from Madison, raising an issue again about the United States Supreme Court. Dick, glad to have you with us this weekend.
I just read something earlier in the week in the Murdoch Rag, otherwise known as the Wall Street Journal. And the guy talked about somebody, I think his name was in the Treasury in 1935, Humphrey, that FDR wanted to get rid of, and then fired him, and the Supreme Court put him back in. I guess what I'm asking, James, is this. I don't trust the Supreme Court at all that to do the right thing. There are a few too many partisan hacks, in my opinion, and when this stuff, if it should go that far, I don't see them as any guardrail whatsoever.
Right. That's the concern, Dick, is it not? We've talked a lot on this broadcast, others, about the guardrails that are out there. And notice we've always focused upon these federal district court judges, the ones who are the trial court judges here in eastern Wisconsin, western Wisconsin, 93 districts around our nation, our territories. They're the ones who are looking at this. They're singular judges, again, appointed by presidents of all parties in recent years. And almost to a person, they're saying, nope, cannot be doing that. So that's the guardrail right now. But to your very good point, the question is what happens after that? And many of these cases are already being appealed by this administration to the appeals courts. And that includes appeals courts like the Fifth Circuit and the Fourth Circuit and others out there, the 11th Circuit, that may not have the same views of these independent individual federal district courts. And then to your very good point, what happens after that if the opinions are not satisfactory to the administration, to the Solicitor General? Then they go up to the Supreme Court. Again, this a little bit of a safeguard there. The Supreme Court has this discretionary decision about whether or not to grant what's called a writ of certiorari to take the case or not. But they're doing some of that, and plainly they'll pick and choose as these cases come up. To your larger point, a Supreme Court that 8 months ago said that we do in fact have a presidency that is not only immune from criminal prosecution, absolutely immune from doing anything of a criminal nature when it comes to communications with the Department of Justice. That's what John Roberts and five other members of the Supreme Court told us 8 months ago. You combine that with this language in the first pages of their opinion that talks once again about this vital and needing to be very quick and muscular and active presidency that cannot be diverted by things like, yes, indeed, criminal prosecutions for violating the law, but anything else that would divert from the appropriate policies and perspectives of the president, those things cannot be tolerated. That's what our Supreme Court said, and that gives rise to your great concern about what they will do if they are both reading what they wrote 8 months ago and also scratching their heads and asking the questions which they should. We know that at least three, maybe four of them will say, you know what, this is too far. This is simply not consistent with the Take Care Clause. You don't have the authority under the legislation, under the Constitution, to do these things like firings and, frankly, other positions, providing Elon Musk and other non-governmental people with access to the Treasury Department records and Social Security records, all those kinds of things. You don't have the authority to do that. We would like to think that even this Supreme Court, which has indeed disappointed us when it comes to enforcing this fundamental notion that no one should be above the law, that we do not have a king, back in July 1 of 2024, they said that we do. And so your concern is legitimate, and your concern about what they may do as these cases percolate up from good and decent district court judges and even appeals court judges, it is a concern. All the more reason why Americans today, in February of 2025 and March going forward, as these cases percolate up, frankly, need to be in touch with our Supreme Court justices and, yes, indeed, our representatives in Congress. And, yes, indeed, although you may not get positive or any responses from even branches in the executive branch, agencies in the executive branch, you need to be heard. And that includes doing what you can do nonviolently to let your dismay be known. And that's a part of the constitutional regime that we have in place for 250 years as well. Thank you so much for that wonderful call and that observation as well. And beyond that, we've got some other callers. We've got Mark. You've been waiting on the line for a while. Mark, your comment or question about what we're talking about on this edition of our broadcast.
Yeah, we're certainly facing, as I said in the past, we're certainly facing the fears that the anti-federalists had about the presidency, and we have a man now that is indeed surrounded by minions and mistresses, and that feels free to do whatever he wants to do at this point in time. The Supreme Court certainly should have to, you know, clip his wings a little bit when these cases finally do make it to him. My fear is with the breakdown of law like this is that we see what has happened in the Russian Federation now since the collapse of the Soviet Union. I mean that assassination and you know, extrajudicial murders have taken place with some regularity over there, and that, and we saw what happened when the Roman Republic collapsed. I mean, when Caesar was assassinated, it wasn't just his enemies that were part of stabbing him with knives; it was his friends as well, because they feared for the Republic.
Et tu, Brute, right? Exactly. It's Shakespeare, right? Et tu, Brute. Exactly. Yep.
And that. I do not want to see the breakdown of law, but I mean that I could easily, because I don't know how clever Donald Trump is, is somebody going to be feeding Trump information? Well, if you take a teaspoon of mercury every day, it's going to ensure you live forever, like the first emperor of Rome, apparently. You know, apocryphally was told stories of that, and that...
And Mark, all your good points raise questions about that are being asked by federal judges as well as these cases percolate up. We've talked a little bit about this, that you've got federal judges quite literally looking at the government attorneys. They're now the Department of Justice attorneys around our nation and asking out loud on the record publicly, Who is standing around the president? Who is telling the president that he can do these things? This birthright citizenship is the one where we first saw this. We've got judges who are plainly smacking that down, saying, no, no, there's no part of the 14th Amendment that permits you to identify a subclass of American citizens. That's not what the language says. That's not what it means. It's never been interpreted that way, and we're not interpreting that way in 2025. They're also asking, what kind of advice is the president getting to do these kinds of things? Who is surrounding him? And are there voices there inside the White House and in these agencies? Are there voices inside the Department of Justice? We know there have been voices. Some of them are departing now, most notably the now former U.S. attorney in Manhattan declining to go ahead and do the bidding of this White House and the Department of Justice and dismissing the indictment against Eric Adams. Others who have left. Others who are still remaining, are those voices still there? We're not seeing them because they can't. They cannot speak publicly. But we have to believe that there are still some people out there who are pushing back and ultimately saying, as did, for example, the acting director of the Social Security Administration, when faced with this request by the Elon Musk and his people to get access, she said, no, I'm not doing that. And when the fight became overwhelming, she said, I'm not being any part of this. I am going to resign. It's a big question about the people surrounding the folks who are moving in these directions. It's underscoring, again, the role of the Senate itself, in confirming, not confirming people who should not be in these positions. Appreciate very much the observation you made, Mark, about all of that and the history that brings us to this point. Ali also calling in about maybe another motive that the president has. Ali, glad to have you part of the broadcast this weekend.
Well, I just wanted to get your opinion. I just wonder if Trump is not ginning up stirring up all this trouble to gin up people's anger where they will protest, just so he can call for martial law, and after calling for martial law, declare that there will be no more elections,
right,
and therefore he'll be able to stay in as president indefinitely.
Right.
What can we do to stop that?
To stop that, right? And you know, Ali, what a great not just rhetorical question. Once again, there was a time in my lifetime, and I suspect in yours as well, when that question would be unthinkable, right? Under presidents of the past of both political parties, unthinkable that a president would do something like that in order to rile up, as you said, the American population with the idea of establishing martial law. It is unthinkable. The question and the notion that we are legitimately considering that underscores not only the status that we're in today in 2025, but as we think about all of these things, the notion that, yes, this is not hyperbole. This is not having our hair on fire. These are legitimate things we all need to ask. And so if Donald Trump plainly looks to another hemisphere and looks over to our ally, South Korea, he will see a leader there who has been impeached by the people, by the legislature there, for that very, very ill-fated attempt to establish martial law there. Martial law at that time by the president imposed for just a few hours before he appropriately rescinded it, but imposed nonetheless by the leader there because of the political unrest. Was it a political situation that for him was untenable? Sure it was. It was difficult. Politics is hard, right? Politics is difficult to manage, and yet martial law is not the response. If Donald Trump looks to that, he will see a people, again, a democratic republic there in South Korea, who said no. And not only are we going to prevent you from going ahead with this, we're going to ensure that even the law enforcement authorities that you might call out, they will meet with us in numbers of thousands. And we're going to protect the legislature. We're going to make certain the legislature can, in fact, enforce the law, pass the law, and rescind martial law. One would like to think, Ali, would we not, that the president would look at that and see, gee, there's a recent precedent where it did not go well, and that leader right now facing impeachment, already replaced, but facing impeachment down the road. Now, is that a possible motive? One would like to think that it is not. Nonetheless, All things these days, regrettably, are possible when we have a president, once again, to underscore the point, cannot be overstated the significance, Ali, of what I think prompts your question, when he writes, again, just a few days ago, that no employee of any executive agency, of any entity at all, that disagrees with my view of the law, no employee can stand. You've got to be loyal to what I say. And any opinion on a matter of law is mine alone. That's what the president of the United States of America said. The question, Ali, rephrased somewhat from your very good articulation of it, is a president who writes that about America, about who we are, and about his authority, is that a president who would also consider imposing martial law because, in his view of things, that is his only alternative? And that's the reason why the very raising of the question, Ali, which we thank you for, is a reason why all Americans need to be looking at this story that regrettably did not get a huge amount of coverage in the national media. It is out there. But in the wake of everything else that's happening this past week, I would offer that as dramatic as these firings, as these stoppings of programs, both domestically and overseas, the financial issues, the stopping of funding for both international programs and domestic programs, as hugely important as all of that is, this is the one that goes to the very core of who we are as a nation. And for that reason, Ali, your question should be answered, and we should all consider the implications of what you've articulated. When we come back here on Amicus Law Review, some final thoughts and also an invocation once again of those other branches of government, the legislature and the Supreme Court in particular. What's going on up there on Capitol Hill? As Amicus Law Review.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home for the Maggie Dawn Show.
Ready. While the teams get ready to choose their top draft pick, you can help Mino and the Mayor choose their top craft pick.
Northeast Wisconsin is home to amazing breweries, wineries, cideries, and distilleries, and we need your help picking the best.
We've drafted 10 of our favorites, but which local craft beverage creator will go to number one? That's up to you. Mino and the Mayor's top craft pick, drafting Northeast Wisconsin's finest one sip at a time. Details coming soon. The Dom Salvia Show.
You know, Harvey, the seemingly purposeful no action. What's your sense on the leadership in the Dem Party right now, Harvey?
I'm ashamed of them. What did Trump have on all these people?
Yeah, right.
That we get this kind of silence. Will the Democratic leadership figure out that it's their task to start articulating a Democratic, small d, Democratic vision and project that these people can rally behind? Bam.
The Dom Salvia Show. Weekdays from 4 till 6 on the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home for the Todd Allball Show.
This is Amicus Law Review, our final moments in this Amicus broadcast of this weekend. Appreciate so much the comments, the questions, the inquiries coming in both on our telephone lines, also our text line. Brian, appreciate also your comment that much of what we're talking about is also on Facebook. And Brian notes, this is crazy. This is crazy. Gene also reaching out to inquire about where you can make access to Amicus Law Review, and my wonderful producer is going to tell us more about how you can listen to more of these broadcasts as we go forward. Greg.
Absolutely. And first of all, thank you. Thank you, everyone who has called and texted and commented. We love hearing from you. It really helps the show keep going, and great to know what you're thinking about and what's concerning you, especially the matters at hand and what Jim has been talking about. Jean from Eau Claire, who is a regular caller, love talking to her. She asked, where can we find the show, Jim? And I'm going to tell you real quick, for those listening on the radio, for those listening on the live stream, if you want to listen to this broadcast again, you can simply go to civicmedia.us, click the shows tab, which is at the top of the page, and find our show, Amicus, a Law Review. And you can listen to back episodes for, I believe, the last 100 episodes. And also, if you want, you can go to your favorite podcast distribution center and you can type in Amicus, a Law Review, and you can subscribe to this show as a podcast to automatically be downloaded to your device of your choice. And you can listen to us on the go, listen to us on demand. That way you don't have to miss anything. But if you want to listen to the live experience and you want to maybe call or comment, it's always Saturday morning, 9 a.m. to 11, right here on the Civic Media Network. But yeah, download the show, subscribe to the show, leave a comment for the show, or review the show, and that helps the program get up in the ratings, because as we hear from all of you, you love this stuff. So share it with a friend. Tell one person you know about the show. Tell one person, and then they'll tell one person, and so on and so forth.
And that's how radio works, right, Greg?
Exactly.
Right? Precisely. Greg, thanks so much for that. And again, so much appreciate the very kind comments coming in about this broadcast. And let me underscore what Greg said with such precision, which is you want to be a part of this discussion. From the time that we first designed this, again, a long, long time ago, with the leadership, including Greg, of Civic Media, anticipated, yes, it would be all about the law, and yes, these wonky things that I sometimes talk about, including today, but wonky things that are important to Americans. Appreciate your responses in all these ways, and especially appreciate your comments, things that we should be focusing upon. There are times when there are issues out there. There is so much going on, as you all well know, that many things end up on the cutting room floor. But this week, of course, this major issue having to do with the rule of law and the presidency itself. Appreciate all of that. Appreciate, Greg, your instruction, your advice to people who want to get even more of this, obviously through the auspices and the mechanisms of civic media. Beyond that, we should comment about something else that's come up during the course of this broadcast and on this weekend show, and that is that while we do have the guardrail of the Supreme Court, maybe, hopefully, as we've talked about in just the last segment, a Supreme Court that right now is about 64 cases on its docket. It's beginning to issue some opinions. And indeed, just this past week, it issued opinion basically ruling against a group of Jewish survivors of the Holocaust, saying they could not sue Hungary in the United States to recover the proceeds of property stolen by its state-owned railway. The company robbed hundreds of thousands of Jews before sending them to Nazi death camps in 1944. Underscores the seriousness of the things that the Supreme Court takes on a regular basis. That particular decision, unanimous decision under the Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act, all those kinds of things, of course, will continue to monitor as the Supreme Court begins to issue in 2025 some of these decisions in its major cases. As we have said, the Supreme Court, the ultimate, perhaps until Tuesday, the ultimate articulator, the ultimate stator of what the law is in America. We know as well that this entire system depends upon a judiciary that is followed. And by that, I mean when challenges are made, whether it is private challenges between private parties, whether you challenge your government, whether you go into court and say, I don't like what my government is doing. I'm challenging what an executive branch order. I'm asking a judge to stay it. I'm asking a judge to stop this from happening. I'm going into court. Our entire concept of the rule of law is premised upon the notion, as remarkable as this is, I often comment about this, that when a judge says, yes, indeed, Mr. Santel, as a representative of the United States of America Department of Justice, I am directing you to do something, you do it. You follow what a judge says. That's called the rule of law. And we, as much as we may not like what judges sometimes do, the Supreme Court has plainly animated an awful lot of Americans in its decisions of recent times about everything from privacy rights to voting rights, all kinds of things, civil rights out there. The reality is in America that we follow what they have told us we are supposed to do because that's the rule of law. That's the tradition of 250 years. What happens when an executive branch, when someone who's the subject, the target of a directive by a federal judge, being told to do something or not do something, simply says no? And so a couple of weeks ago, we commented about the fact that a federal judge said that the White House indeed defied his order to release billions of dollars in federal grants as marking the first time a judge had expressly declared that Donald Trump was disobeying a judicial mandate. That ruling from John McConnell in Rhode Island, ordering the Trump administrations to comply with what he called the plain text of an edict he issued last month, having to do once again with these federal domestic grants. The judge saying, you've got to do this, and you're wrong not to. Donald Trump simply saying no. More recently, we've got a judge the same kind of thing happening. A federal judge just this past week saying the Trump administration failing to comply with his order to resume federal payments. Yes, that's right. To foreign assistance programs administered by, yes, the USAID.
He declined to hold the government in contempt, but said, "You're not filing what I told you to do." That's District Judge Amir Ali. We've talked a lot about him. He's in Washington, D.C., and it's one of the several lawsuits challenging Donald Trump's executive orders aimed at substantially, of course, slashing these trillions of dollars in government spending, though it's already been approved by Congress. What happens? What happens when, indeed, this president says, "No, I am the law," as he said this past Tuesday, and, oh, by the way, those federal judges who say what the law is, John Jay told us this way back in the early part of the 19th century. If the president says no, what happens next? And I would offer to you, and this is a dour note, a dark note to begin to conclude our program on, that's when we have the constitutional crisis in America, when we no longer have an observance of the rule of law, when a chief executive says, "I am not going to do what a judge tells me to do." And that is the reason why, going back to all of our wonderful questions and comments and inquiries that text online and offline about what we do next, that is why everyone in America needs to ask themselves, what can I do? What should I do? Answers are different for every single one of us. Advocacy publicly, and yes, indeed, maybe that public advocacy which we've started to see in America has got to continue. We'll talk about more about all of that as future editions of Amicus Law Review broadcast here on the stations of Civic Media. Have a good weekend, everybody.
From De Pere to Suamico, 97.9 WGBW. Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody, join us next time as we'll look back at the weekend headlines with our friend and contributor Matt Flynn, an attorney and two-time chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. Don't miss it.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
Do you hear that? Asthma triggers are everywhere, from dust mites, pet dander, and pollen, to smog and smoke. An asthma attack can strike anywhere, anytime. Be prepared with quick-acting Primatene Mist. Clinically proven to open airways quickly. It's the number one FDA-approved asthma inhaler available over-the-counter. Primatene Mist. Breathe easy again. Use as directed.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app. This is 97.9 WGBW Denmark, Green Bay's real news and great conversation, a Civic Media radio station.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. Health officials in Texas say the measles outbreak continues to grow. There are now 90 cases. 16 people have been hospitalized. The majority have been unvaccinated. ABC medical correspondent Dr. Darian Sutton says that could be a cause.
The goal of vaccination or herd immunity is to get at least 95% of people within the community to get vaccinated against measles to protect against outbreaks. But since the pandemic, we've seen a steady decline, and we have pocket communities that are significantly undervaccinated, most notably Gaines County in Texas, which is where we're seeing this current outbreak.
President Trump fired General C.Q. Brown, the chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, on Friday. He did not announce a reason, but he also fired several other senior military leaders. Hamas returned 6 hostages to Israel, the last exchange of the first phase of the ceasefire. And the president of the L.A. Firefighters Union said they're outraged at the firing of Chief Kristen Crowley on Friday. This is ABC News.